Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. The man telling his story tonight is from my home group. It's the early morning study group. And so it's my pleasure to introduce Carl Chase.
Good evening. My name is Carl, and I am alcoholic. You know, when coming here tonight, I look at as I'm coming up on 3 years, that it took that long to get sober long enough to tell this story. I didn't know it was going to be that emotional to start with. But, you know, because my view came to me in a prison cell after receiving 2 years that I had to serve in the state penitentiary. And from where I started, the question that I asked myself, you know, throughout the time that I was going through my changes was that, how do I get out of this? And then one day, I slipped up after 6 months, and I said to myself, how did I get into this? You know, growing up, I was a pretty talented kid, you know, quiet. And pretty protected, mostly by most of my family. And, you know, I always had a talent for dancing and singing and playing an instrument, and I was pretty good at that. And I was involved in a lot of activities growing up. And I noticed that, for me, that my biggest problem was I could do things well, but communicate with people. And that was one of my greatest fears. You know, there were times throughout my life where I had been around alcohol. And I would sneak as a little kid and, you know, take the drinks that were left on the table and mix them all together and, you know, like kids would do. I'm saying, wow, this concoction right here, what's going to happen to me when I drink this? And I drank it. And I felt myself going to a place that I wanted to try again. But I knew I had to wait till the elders got back together again and had another party and left the drinks around. So it wasn't something that I found myself really connected to right away. And the biggest part I remember is that when I first started high school, I was leaving elementary school, and I wanted to join the high school band. And my uncle, who was a drum major at his time, I wanted to be a drum major. But when I got to high school, I was only 4'11", and the uniform they had was for a 6-foot guy. And I was pretty insulted about that, because I figured they couldn't get a uniform to fit me. And I did very well in the competition, you know, to get that position. But because it was such a short time for them to get ready for the event for our football team, that I had to go in and do something else. That afternoon, I got so pissed. I sat and I was talking with some guys I just met that was out in the back in the playground. And they were drinking. And I decided to take a drink with them. And when I did that, I said, well, pump it. Forget about being a drum major. I'll go join the drum line. You know what I'm saying? So I go to the rehearsal of the drum line, and wow, here it is. I come out in the drum line. So here I'm marching in the band. My only way of really communicating was that drum, that music, that thing that I was doing. Never really relating to the people that I was with. It's the things that we were doing. And I always got sold out by my band director about being in one mind, one spirit. I think I took that too literally. Because when we went out on, you know, other activities to go and march and competitions, that when everybody went off to take a drink, I went off to take a drink too. Right? One mind, one spirit. And we would all be drunk. And we would go through this ritual, and then we would get ready to go march. And the thing that was so profound was that, you know, the high school I went to, it was predominantly all black. And the name of the high school was Malcolm X Shabazz High. And it was one of the first 250-piece all, well, I could say, color of people. Not, it wasn't just Caucasian, but mostly black and Hispanics. And we did an outstanding job, you know, through my years of high school, to get our school to be recognized so it could be a help to our community as well, because it was in a pretty low area of town. But I took pride in that. And I always felt that the drinking had nothing to do with that. I always felt it had something to do with me being able to be where I was. But I noticed that I started losing a lot of concerns for other academics in school as far as, like, my grades. It seemed like I was drowning myself out in music. But it wasn't that. It was the time I was having. And one embarrassing thing I had done one time, it was, you know, I was pretty well known in high school, and, you know, kind of, you know, the position I had, a lot of ladies were, you know, attracted to me. But this one lady, I asked, like I said, everybody was wondering who I was going to ask to go to the prom. I asked her to go to the prom, and I actually got out and got drunk, and I went back to this young lady, a sweet young lady, and I canceled it and told her that I didn't want to take her. And I didn't know what had come over me to have that boldness to do that. And I felt guilty afterwards. But I knew, I didn't know that it had anything to do with the alcohol. But I knew it had something to do with what I had a boldness in to say and do at that time. And after I scrambled around with my drinking buddies and kind of conveyed to them what happened, they'd say, oh, bump it, man, it's other girls. Better get over it. But that, you know, I guess that's how alcoholics act. So I went along with that. But down in my gut, because I know the kind of young man I was growing up to be, that was totally out of character. I didn't witness much more until I got ready to get ready to go to college. And I was offered a scholarship for music. I had taken all city, state, county, and percussion. And not only that, even a few other sports I had came and took and got quite a bit of awards. And my mother was so proud of me, so proud. My family was, by the way. But I didn't know my way. I was doing it all because it was something to do. You know, being at home was good. But I noticed most of my problems were, like I said, when I was outside dealing with other people. I would just, like I said, I found myself drinking because they did. And I found myself in fear when I went to college. Because where I went to college, I had an opportunity to go to either Florida University, and march in their band, or either AME, the Florida AME, and it was its and Grambling State University. But instead, I put in to go to New Jersey Institute of Technology. At the time, it was Newark College of Engineering. And I was kind of nervous about getting accepted there, but I had a little trouble with my math. And I kind of gave into it and went to community college, just the little community college that was in my state. And I finally got that letter to go there, and I went. But, like I said, not knowing how to deal with other people. That I found myself in college around people of so many other different walks of life. And I didn't really know how to communicate. I didn't really know how much that I was conditioned to the lifestyle that I was living. And when I got there, I saw I had made it somewhere, but I didn't know where. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel I did. The courses wasn't hard, but my way of communicating was, I just couldn't see myself there. So I found myself doing a lot of other things, picking up a little marijuana here, some other drugs here, because I didn't want to get caught with the smell of alcohol. I mean, these things didn't smell, so I could take those. But really, my choice was alcohol. That was what I really wanted to do. But then I found myself, my family got pretty upset because I didn't tell them that I dropped out. I just couldn't take it anymore. I got tired of all the school books. I got tired of all these figures. I got tired of calculus. I got tired of now there's another one coming, trigonometry. I just got tired of it. I said, I want to do something else. So I enrolled in Whitney Technical Institute to be an automotive technician. And when I told my mother what I had done, she said, well, son, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. She worked so hard to help me get the books and tools I needed to go to engineering school. They were pretty upset. But as an alcoholic, which I didn't know, I didn't care. I was doing what I needed to do, what I thought I needed to do. But my grandmother, who is still living now, would be 96 in December. When I told her, she said, you mean to tell me they spent all that money for you to be a grease monkey? And I said, well, Grandma, it's not all that. I tried to explain it to her. She said, oh, poof. You know, she's about the only one that stood up. But even during that time, I met a few guys, you know, because, you know, being in a school like that, guys race cars. You know, we build cars to race, you know. Now there's competition. I didn't see all that. But I found myself hanging out with guys, you know, learning more about how to build these fast cars. And, you know, I was really getting into it. And I didn't really realize how much I was pulling away from my family. They kind of direct me towards the change, but I couldn't really see it. You know, I thought I was just doing what I needed to do and that they needed to give me a break. I think I got a little bit more clarity on it with my sister, because me and my sister were very close growing up. And I noticed how very distant she became after a while. We couldn't even communicate anymore. And then I kept fooling around, and I would start not going to school, missing some days. You know, I was doing pretty good. I was pretty knowledgeable about how to fix vehicles, and so I could miss a few days, you know. And I started hanging out at the clubs, dealing with all the girls, you know. Now I got this fast car. You know, I'm not as shy as I used to be. I had this great reputation for dancing, and then I sang, and, you know, so I was a woman's dream. But the thing that was so sad was that after the night was over, and after some of those women that had taken me a lot more serious than I thought, that I wondered, how do I deal with that? You know, I was this nice guy in appearance, but in my heart, I wasn't a nice guy. I remember an episode where I was drinking, and I had a young lady come over to visit. This is by the time I had to get a job from through the job placement office for where I went to school at Lincoln Tech. And I always had a great job, always had a good job for a young man. And I was working for Lincoln Off-Welding Company. And I was fixing their generators. That's what I did. And I couldn't have been more than about 21 then. And I was making real good money. Had a nice crib, two cars, shop. Everybody just loved me. And I did something really embarrassing. I didn't think it was embarrassing, but after I looked it over, I found out it was... I wasn't a nice guy. I thought I was. you know. I had one young lady sitting in my house, and here's my doorbell ring, and here's another. And instead of me turning her away, I offer her in too. And the bell rings again, here's a third one. I open the door, let her in too. I wound up with five girls in my house at one time. And I'm sitting there like it's okay. You know, and they all, but you know, all of y'all are my friends, and now I'm making this excuse. I'm going to call up a couple of my buddies. We got to get some beer and this, that. Y'all guys got to come over here. I'm in the jam. I got five girls here, and I don't know what to do about it, you know. But really, I didn't care. I really didn't care. I didn't have that feeling, you know, that this was wrong, you know. I had a reputation. Alcohol gave me a place and a job and a career. I mean, I call it a career. You know what I'm saying? But then things begin to spiral down, little by little. And I came to Mom one day, and she said, you know, it's, I didn't bring you up that way, to carry yourself like that. And I wish you would try to pull yourself together, you know, because it doesn't look gentlemanlike. But I was like, who's complaining? You know. But what little happened, I finally got one of the young girls pregnant. And now I'm facing fatherhood. And I found myself quitting school to go get a job to support a girl and a baby that I still didn't care about. It was only because it was supposed to be the right thing. You know, for a while, AA has really helped me to be able to look back on my life and be able to have some answers. I don't think I could have done this a year ago or 2 years ago because I was too busy trying to get the bad things to stop happening. I was too busy still concerned about me. I came in here wanting to get a job. I came in here wanting to get into rehab just so I could put some more clothes on my back. I had no idea how much damage I had done. I just know that I was in fear. I had lost the ability to have any integrity and respect for myself. And all I wanted to do was just get that back. And I thought, if I just get a rehab and I get up in here and just stop drinking, everything will fix itself. And surprisingly enough, I came in, and I made it through 4 years and 11 months. But the only strange thing about those 4 years, you know, because I had to be truthful, there was something else that I had did in that four-year period, and I never told about it. And I had a friend that was also in the fellowship at that time, and he told me, well, you don't need to tell about it. You didn't drink. But it was another substance. But it was still wrong. And it wasn't honest. And about 2 years, 11 months came, and I was just getting ready to come up to get my next month, to get my 5 year check. My father died. I remember my father saying to me that he was proud of me. He said, you may not be able to accomplish the goals and get back the opportunities you had, but one thing for a fact, I can see that you will prosper and be able to do something worthy with the time that you have now. And I had to go get his ring because I couldn't tell my father I lied because he had died. And I said, what am I going to do now? And I sat there and I said, now I've been in this program 4 years and 11 months. Why did I take that dream? Because I grew a conscience. Because I wasn't being true to myself. It wasn't what I said to my father. It's what I did to myself. And I mean, I had to live with that life. But you know what? I said, I can fix this. I can fix this by doing what I told him that I did, or what he believed I did. And that's go back, pick up a white chip, and stick and stay. Because I can. If I can do it 4 years and 11 months, I can do it. And I'm saying whatever it takes, I can do it. You know, I've been able to go back after some years now and see family members, and it kind of brings tears in my eyes. They look at me and they say, I knew you was going to do it. They knew what I didn't know. I had given up on it. You know, sad enough to say that when I first left home, because I had to leave home after a while, I had to back up here a little bit because I missed the part when my mother died. And my mother died on my birthday. And she always used to say to me, because I always have had a complication with my older brother and younger sister. Seemed like I was always a good kid that everybody always talked about. But I knew inside I had some devil men in me. But I could never really be honest with Mom. And Mom died. And I remember getting drunk and going over to the graveyard.
Come on, man. You got strength back up.
And I sat by her grave. And I said, Mom, what am I going to do now? I said, I guess I'll leave. It's time for me to set out on my own and try to do something with my life. Mom's gone now. But all I did was try to be these tears. It took almost 20 years to come out because I refused to cry. And because I refused to let go of what that pain really was, I continued to drink. My life took a real downward spiral then. I found myself on train tracks, riding from state to state, singing little songs, and before I knew it, I didn't want to believe what I had become, but I had become a hobo. Riding from train to train, town to town. I finally made it to Florida and met a guy that was living in the woods. And we drank together. He had a nerve to have a pet raccoon and a pet squirrel. I liked the squirrel, but his name was Ralph. He's pretty cool. And this guy actually was a college professor. He was a Caucasian guy. He's real smart, though. Had a little cage he built where he kept his books in. Taught me a lot about how to fish with lines, how to catch fish, how to take a bath in a lake. And I stayed out there for a whole year with him. And I learned how to live off the vegetation. But something strange happened during that period of time that I got a chance to look at nature and see something that I didn't really understand about nature and this guy's relationship with these animals. And I still had a great deal of fear of people, but I could relate to these animals. But I had to try to come back into the world again, stop hiding in the woods, try it again. I couldn't do it without a drink. Desperation. I found myself doing things that I never imagined. From panhandling to shoplifting, breaking it in. Didn't know what was becoming of me, what had become of me. This little kid that used to dance and make everybody laugh and was sitting in a college classroom that some people would have died to have an opportunity to. You know? But hay ain't helped bring me around. to show me why I went there. See, I went there because I was too busy not loving me. See, everybody else saw in me what I didn't see in me, and I just had a great fear. But because I didn't know how to open up and speak out. Because see, a lot of this stuff, I never talked to them about. I just reacted. But AA taught me how to open my mouth, say what was in my heart. You know, that 4 years and 11 months also, I sat around the fear of telling people too much of my business. What business do I have that people in here don't know about? That was part of my disease. I actually had a secret that you didn't know about. And I was an alcoholic, and this is a place for alcoholics. There was no secret I could keep. The only secret I could keep was that I'm still telling a lie, and that wasn't even a secret. So, you know, today, what it's like, you know, I can look at myself and admit where I was. Admit that I was weak, scared, tired, confused, lost, and didn't know what life was all about. I had no idea. I was just surviving to live. And sitting in that jail cell, the big thought came over me when I was last time when the police said, put the handcuffs on me. I was praying. I said, God, I just need somewhere for a while just so I can think things through, just so I can just see what's going on. I got it. I got 2 years to sit here, and I didn't have to worry about eating, didn't worry about where I was going to sleep, and I could think all I wanted to think. And I did. And even, too, to be honest, that AA was in there, but I never really went to AA meetings. I went and I heard a message, but what I did, I kind of picked up the religion, you know what I'm saying? I took the jailhouse religion, and that's how I became jailhouse religion. Because I would study that Bible and reach out and help everybody else to help me feel good about me. I read something in there, and it said, in getting wisdom and knowledge, also get understanding. So upon leaving that facility and making it back to the streets again, you know, religious guy, I got it together. I wind right back up in the same spot again. Strange thought came, which really wasn't strange. I've heard it before. Having sense to know what makes sense and doing what don't make sense. That don't make sense. And that's where I was. I was in two places, and yet I was nowhere. I had the know-how, and I had the problem, but I didn't know how to get out of it. But I still wouldn't be quiet. I still would try to find a way to have something to say, to try to bring people around to understanding that I knew where I was and that I was going to be all right. And I wasn't. For a long time. For a very long time. You know, and a lot of it didn't show up until I was in a room by myself. But it's, I could be in a room by myself now, and what I know about AA and myself, man, it's wonderful. Because I've had so much I could think about that I have done. What God has blessed me with, what this program has done, and the people that took the time out to share stories with me like I'm sharing with you. Honest truth. Not the story I'm going to stick to, the story that sticks to me. The truth. See, I'm not afraid of the truth now, because I'm a human being. And I knew as a kid that I did well because I practiced. I had to have something to do to get better. Why now do I go away from the thing that was so fundamental? I didn't learn to dance on my own. Somebody taught me. I didn't learn to play them drums on my own. Somebody taught me. I didn't learn to sing on my own. And not only that, I wasn't singing by myself. So they weren't disappointing for me. You know, it's what people helped me do. And I had a great love for that growing up. But alcohol made a difference. And it wasn't just the substance. It's what I used the substance for. Because I tried to cope when I couldn't cope. And then I got in a fight with alcohol. I got in a fight with it because I was determined you're going to go with me and get things straightened out. Because you started this with me. You're going to end it with me. And I always saw myself one day doing well, sitting there with a good cocktail saying, glad that's over. Boy, better things. Never going to happen. Never going to happen. You know, my early morning group had, oh my God, you're talking about a multitude of counselors. It's not just, you know, the one sponsor I have, but it's all of those that come together that have such a concern for maintaining the joy that they have. And as each one shares what their suffering and what the experience is and the joy, that it keeps us coming back. You know, it keeps us coming back. And it's not done with one person. It's done with a group. All that care. I would be lying if I sat in and said I didn't care. It's not a choice of who comes in this room that I care about. It's who's in need. We're all human. You know, I had a rude awakening, and I sat in front of the TV one time. I think I was about 10 years old. And I was listening at Martin Luther King, and I heard his, I had a dream speech. And that's what I wanted to be like. I wanted to feel love, and I wanted to give love. I thought I lost that opportunity. I hated myself. I took advantage of these sweet ladies that cared something about me. I took advantage of a family that worked hard and scraped up money to send me to school. I hated me. But when I got here, yeah, I hated me. And it was okay that I hated me. Because I didn't understand that I was sick. And that's right, I hated what I was sick over. You helped me come around to that. I hated what was making me sick. It was good that I had that hate. But I don't have to hate me. I had to hate what I was doing that was keeping me sick. It had got so progressive that even in my struggle to get back to reality, that I have to be precautioning myself with the help of you, of course, so that it doesn't get any more progressive. You know, there's not another chance that I can go out that I could believe that I could come back. I think, you know, I enjoy so much of being here where I am that I don't want to go back. I struggle so hard to get back to a place where I can really feel and see reality. I did not see reality. I didn't know if I ever would. I've never seen life from this angle. I had a sense of how beautiful it was. My grandfather kind of made me feel that. I used to watch this old man get up every morning. I was 5 years old, and sitting in his chair, swinging my little legs, watching him get up every morning, put his suit on and tie, and get some business about himself. I wanted to do that. I wanted to do that. Anyway, I don't know. Telling this story, it comes in so many different pieces. Because some I can remember, and some I'm still destined to remember. But I won't get it unless I keep coming back. I got enough to keep me here right now. And I know the joy that I have. man, I love me. I love life. I thank God for me. I thank God for you. I thank God to be able to be here and say what I'm saying. And, you know, I don't think I was really in my drinking days that I sat here and cried in front of everybody. But the reason why I can cry, because it's for real. I'm not afraid to let you know that, yeah, it hurt him. This baby worked a long time, long and hard. And like I said, I didn't know I was sick. But if it wasn't for this being a blessing to me, to be able to see that I was sick, how long would I probably live with that regret? How long? But I kept drinking until the day I decided I had the guts to take a gun and shoot myself. Hang myself. AA helped me come around to that. I'm just a sick person. A lost person. Scared person. And that's okay. That's okay. Because I'm human. I'm not perfect. I learned one thing, I can be good at a lot of things if I just allow myself to be teachable. I want to thank y'all for allowing me to share. I know it's time left on the clock, but it's not much more I can say. You know, I'm just happy. I'm just happy. It's not where I've been, it's where I'm going. And rest assured, you can go too. It takes work now. Takes guts. Takes being honest. Honest with oneself, you know. More than anything, being honest with yourself. But I can feel good to know that I finally come around to seeing what those two wonderful people tried to get me to see, and I lived long enough to be able to put it into action. You know, I'm thankful for my mother. Thankful for my father. Thank you for my grandpa. And my grandma, who's still living, who told me on my way here, she said, just keep doing what you're doing, son, and take care of yourself. That's all she said. Thank you. And God bless you.
Thank you, Carl.
I won't have to fight it no more. Somehow, someway, I'll win my fight someday. And we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway.